Unit 3, pages 59 through 61. Lesson B, Reading. Track 1-6. The Urban Visionary. For the first time in history, the world's population is mostly urban. Richard Wurman decided to find out what that really means. When architect and urban planner Richard Wurman learned that the majority of Earth's population lived in cities, he became curious. He wondered what the effects will be of global urbanization. With a group of business and media partners, Wurman set out on a 5-year study, a project called 19-20-21, to collect information about urbanization, focusing on the world's largest urban concentrations, or megacities. The project's aim is to standardize the way information about cities, such as health, education, transportation, energy consumption, and arts and culture, is collected and shared. The hope is that urban planners will be able to use these objective data to enhance the quality of life for people in cities while reducing the environmental impact of urbanization.
What draws people to cities?
People flock to cities because of the possibilities for doing things that interest them. Those interests and the economics that make them possible are based on people living together. We really have turned into a world of cities. Cities cooperate with each other. Cities trade with each other. Cities are where you put museums, where you put universities, where you put the centers of government, the centers of corporations. The inventions, the discoveries, the music and art in our world all take place in these intense gatherings of individuals.
Tell us about 19-20-21.
For the first time in history, more people live in cities than outside them. I thought I'd try to discover what this new phenomenon really means. I went to the web, and I tried to find the appropriate books and lists that would give me information, data, maps, so I could understand. And I couldn't find what I was looking for. I couldn't find maps of cities to the same scale. Much of the statistical information is gathered independently by each city, and the questions they ask are often not the same. There's no readily available information on the speed of growth of cities. Diagrams on power, water distribution and quality, health care, and education aren't available. So a metropolis can't find out any information about itself relative to other cities, and therefore can't judge the success or failure of programs. So I decided to gather consistent information on 19 cities that will have more than 20 million people in the 21st century. That's what 19-20-21 is about. We'll have a varied group of young cities, old cities, third world cities, second world cities, first world cities, fast-growing cities, slow-growing cities, coastal cities, inland cities, industrial cities, and cultural cities, so that cities around the world can see themselves relative to others.
What are some of the cities you're looking at?
What inspires me is being able to understand something, and understanding often comes from looking at extremes. So the cities that pop out are the ones that are clearly the largest, the oldest, the fastest growing, the lowest, the highest, the densest, the least dense, or the largest in area. The densest city is Mumbai. The fastest growing is Lagos. For years, the largest city was Mexico City, but Tokyo is now the biggest. There are cities that are basically spread out, like Los Angeles. Then there are classic cities, which you certainly wouldn't want to leave out, like Paris. I find the data on cities to be endlessly fascinating. Just look at the world's 10 largest cities through time. The biggest city in the year 1000 was Cordoba, Spain. Beijing was the biggest city in 1500 and 1800. London in 1900, New York City in 1950, and today it's Tokyo.
Cities are increasingly challenged to sustain their infrastructure and service. Can they survive as they are now?
Nothing survives as it is now. All cities are cities for the moment, and our thoughts about how to make them better are thoughts at the moment. There was great passion 30 years ago for the urban bulldozer, that we had to tear down the slums, tear down the old parts of cities, and have urban renewal. That lasted for about 10, 15 years, until it didn't seem to work very well. And yet the reasons for doing it seemed justified at that moment. It shows that the attempt to make things better often makes things worse. We have to understand before we act, and although there are a lot of little ideas for making things better, better learning, increased safety, cleaner air, you can't solve the problem with a collection of little ideas. One has to understand them in context and in comparison to other places.
You're an architect by training. Do you agree with the UK's Prince Charles that architects have ruined the urban landscape?
You can point to examples where architecture has ruined the urban landscape, and you can point to places where architecture has been the fundamental positive change. Look at the High Line Park that runs along the Hudson River on the west side of Manhattan. That was done by architects and urban planners. Has it ruined New York? No. It's the beginning of knitting parts of the place together and the recognition that you're on the water, and it's a healthy thing. But there is too much bling architecture. That's the showbiz part of architecture. Even though these individual buildings might be wonderful, they are not necessarily wonderful within the fabric of the city. Sometimes you can excuse them because they draw people from around the world to see them and therefore improve the health of the city. The classic example is Bilbao. Frank Gehry's Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao draws millions of people and has changed this industrial Spanish city into a center for tourism. It's inspired other architects to improve the subway system and other buildings, and some of the wineries and some of the hotels in and around the city, so that bling is certainly excusable. But buildings that have nothing to do with the fabric of the city, that are brought about by the client's desire to have a signature building, those are not, in the long run, healthy, because the fabric is what makes the city. Venice's Piazza San Marco was made by the fabric of all the buildings around that incredible square, with just one cathedral at the end.